No She Didn't is a new podcast produced by a husband and wife team. They focus on the forensic psychology aspect of true crime and criminal investigations. Each week a new podcast will be released on Fridays discussing a true crime case and how forensic psychology played a role in the investigation.
Somebody that I felt had sort of two personas. He presented to some as this family man, fiercely loyal. However, there was clearly this real sinister man. This is somebody who was going through the fields at night, cutting fences. He was lying in wait, surveilling the houses before going in.
One particular fence, he threw a television at the head of one of them, kicked the victims, tied them up and continually started to go back to them and hit them with the butt of the gun. And to me, it was as if the person was actually enjoying what they were doing.
Detectives believed Cooper's violent crimes and his controlling behaviour in custody could match the profile of the murderer, but they needed more proof. In the cold case files, they found a wanted poster of a man who had used one of the victim's cash point cards just hours after they were murdered.
I can particularly remember the artist's impression poster being in the bus shelter of the village which I grew up in. There would have been, you know, discussions with my friends then around, my lord, there's somebody living around here who's done these offences.
Police now needed to know if the mystery man could possibly be John Cooper.
It was quite important that we tried to get an image of him, of how he was around the time, certainly, of the Dixon's murder, so we could then compare it with the artist's impression.
The detectives made an extraordinary discovery. In 1989, the same year as one of the double murders, their suspect had been a contestant on the popular game show Bullseye.
You've got an unusual hobby, John, haven't you?
Oh, yes, the scuba diving.
The scuba diving. Well, apparently, it's the place to do it down there, isn't it?
Oh, we've got the coastline.
Because, because the mountains are sort of inverted and you've got all these...
Well, we've got the deep water where you can sort of swim over mountains and all sorts.
Yeah, we hope you all have a good night with us. Give them a round of applause.
Just 3 weeks after this episode was filmed, Peter and Gwenda Dixon were shot dead on the coastal path.
You've got £220. What are you going to do?
You'd like to gamble.
There it is.
We managed to then freeze John Cooper in exactly the same position as the artist's impression, and for me, it was like a tracing. The way he was standing, his build, the hair, the scraggly hair, the sort of shoulder length, the unkempt look and moustache. A senior investigating officer or advisor, I showed it to him, and his response to me was, fucking hell, Wilkie, it's him.
Hey everybody, it's Alicia
and Jamie,
and we are here today to talk to you about a case from the United Kingdom. And I have to give you a little bit of humor and comedy in the very beginning of this episode. Jamie has decided that he is now from Wales, is that right?
Well, our killer, murderer, rapist type person is from Wales, and a lot of these places in the United Kingdom are hard to pronounce, or at least don't sound right when you talk like an American.
Okay, so go ahead and give us your little spiel that you gave me when I started to record this podcast.
Oh, I can't until we get there because
I
don't remember all the names of the places.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to let Jamie start it out, and then we'll go back and...
I'm going to try to authentically replicate these place names in their original Welsh.
Okay, so what's that one?
That would be Middleford Haven in Pembrokeshire.
Okay, and let's see if I can find another place. I just like that one.
Pembrokeshire.
Okay, so, and then...
Yeah, you can't say Pembrokeshire. You have to say Pembrokeshire, because if you don't say Pembrokeshire, it just doesn't sound right.
Okay. Well, you sound like a leprechaun, and so I'm not...
Leprechauns is Ireland, and this is more Scotland, England. Okay. It's a totally different island.
Okay. Well, all I know is this little individual hick family from Kentucky trying to do a podcast for the United Kingdom is going to go well. So, I hope you guys enjoy the podcast.
My last name is Jones for a reason.
So, anyway, we're going to go ahead and be serious and get the case to you. We know that you guys enjoy them. And so, we're going to talk today about John William Cooper. He's actually known as the Bullseye Killer. He is a robber, a rapist, and murderer that committed his crimes in the United Kingdom during the late 1980s. So, it took nearly 25 years of police investigation and forensic research to finally charge a killer, who behind the facade of a family man in reality was a violent robber, callous rapist, and four-time murderer, with a penchant for brutality that verged on the pathological.
John William Cooper was, in public, a gentle and friendly person to friends and the outside world, but to his family, he was a controlling thug with an explosive temper. The Welshman from Milford Haven, Pembrokeshire, even presented his curly-haired family man side to the nation through television quiz shows, notably ITV's Bullseye in the late 80s. Behind the happy-go-lucky mask of a good-looking and ordinary citizen was a capacity for cruelty and extreme violence. The psychopath's sadism wasn't just reserved for vulnerable strangers he chose to rob, but was also inflicted on close family members and even the pet dog.
I was able to go onto YouTube and actually look up the episode of Bullseye that he was on, and he's actually quite attractive. He's a decent looking man. Like, if you were to see him out somewhere, you wouldn't think that he was someone that possessed this type of evil. So that's just another thing that we always have to be careful. Looks are often deceiving.
It's always the last one you think. The last guy you think would be that way, he's the guy.
Kind of like the Ted Bundy thing, being well-spoken, handsome. This gentleman was the same exact way.
Intelligent.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So Cooper's heinous crimes started between 1985 and 1989, and they cast a menacing shadow across a small, rural part of southwest Wales. Like I said, for about a quarter of a century, it is a unique and disturbing case in that it took over two decades to bring the serial killer to justice. 14 of those years were actually spent serving time for robberies toward the latter end of Cooper's incarceration, giving the police a limited time frame to search for crucial forensic evidence that would link him to two double murders and the sexual assault of two teenage girls.
So, Pembrokeshire in southwest Wales is renowned for its outstanding coastal beauty and nature trails. But in June of 1989, it became the unlikely scene of horror after the vicious robbery and murder of middle-aged couple Peter and Gwenda Dixon, who were holidaying in the area near Milton Haven. The savage attack by Cooper using a shotgun left some police officers traumatized by the handiwork of a killer who lacked humanity and was unafraid to use violence to the extreme. The headline-grabbing double murder in such an idyllic part of the country was the beginning of an investigation that would eventually present the police with another double murder, one that had taken place 5 years before.
Peter and Gwenda Dixon had been holidaying away from their home in Witney, Oxfordshire, setting up camp at the Howelton Camping and Caravan Park near Littlehaven, that offered stunning views of the Pembrokeshire coast. On the morning of June the 29th, 1989, they were enjoying their last day in the area and decided to dry out their tent while they went for a walk on one of the popular coastline paths. Shortly afterwards, this peaceful, idyllic holiday turned into a nightmare when they were confronted by the terrifying sight of Cooper, who was dressed in black with a ski mask over his head and brandishing a shotgun.
One can only imagine the terror the couple suffered looking into Cooper's demonic eyes as they were tied up and robbed with the shotgun pointing at their heads. Peter was forced to hand over his bank card together with the PIN number, and both terrified victims were shot at close range, one before the other, so that whoever died last must have known their terrible fate. In total, Cooper fired 5 times, continuing to shoot sadistically at the already dead bodies, who were not discovered until 5 days later, when their worried son contacted the Dyfed Powells police to report his missing parents. The couple had been brutally murdered for just 300 pounds. I'm not sure what that translates to in American money, but I can't think it's very much.
I wouldn't think so either. At the scene of the murder where Cooper had attempted to hide the bodies under bracken and brush, Detective Superintendent Aldwin Jones admitted that officers were emotionally affected by what they witnessed due to the appalling facial injuries inflicted on the Dixons. Such a brutal and inexplicable murder of a harmless middle-aged couple in a peaceful rural setting fueled conspiracies, including theories that Peter and Gwenda may have interrupted a drug gang or had stumbled on an ammunition and weapons cache by the likes of the IRA or members of a criminal gang.
The shocking double murder, sickening in its violence, immediately sparked a massive manhunt and the gathering of an insurmountable amount of forensic work, which in 1989 was unable to benefit from advanced DNA testing.
I think Jamie's been hitting the Irish liquor.
Luckily, the majority of artifacts were archived and preserved for future analysis when that technology became available, and maybe I should have just done this whole thing in an accent.
So, 4 years before the Pembrokeshire, murders, Cooper had carried out his first double killing with equal ferocity. On December the 22nd in 1985, the psychopath decided to rob a 3-story farmhouse at Scoveston Park, Milford Hagen, owned by middle-aged siblings Richard and Helen Thomas. The brutal and gratuitously sadistic attack on the pair was assumed by the police at the time to have been a robbery gone wrong. Similar to the trademark violence later played out in 1989, Cooper had threatened his victims with a shotgun before tying them up, robbing them, and then shooting them both at close range. He then set fire to the house in order to destroy evidence of the crime at a time when DNA technology was still several years from being developed.
Cooper maintained the image of a family man who liked a flutter. His gambling was prodigious, and despite winning money, he also quickly lost it, resulting in his moods changing violently, as witnessed and experienced by Cooper's young son and terrified mother. According to his son in a television documentary, Cooper never shared his winnings with his family and quickly went through a win of £70,000, leading yet again to desperation to find money.
Years later, in interviews, Cooper's adult son revealed that he had been beaten regularly for the most minor of transgressions, constantly bounced off of the walls, and at one point, when just 11 years age, he feared for his life when his sadistic father pointed a shotgun at his face, close range, and taunted the terrified boy as his cowardly tormentor pulled the trigger. A family pet dog, having gone lame through old age, was taken into the back garden by Cooper and beaten to death for half an hour, rather than having the defenseless creature put down humanely at a vet. During these years, where Cooper acted as a controlling tyrant at home, he was also making a name for himself as a competitor on TV quiz shows.
Some 4 years after the horrific killing of siblings Richard and Helen Thomas in Milford Haven, the narcissistic side of Cooper led him to appear as a contestant on the popular dart show Bullseye. Presented by the jocular Jim Bowen, Cooper exchanged trivialities revealing that to the nation that his unusual hobby was scuba diving. The curly-haired and seemingly ordinary contestant hid from millions of TV viewers the darkest of secrets, that he was in fact a sadistic and brutal killer of 2 people who was yet to carry out another horrific double murder in less than 4 weeks after the TV show was recorded. Now, whether Cooper made appearances on television out of vanity, a need for money, or self-belief in his deluded sense of invincibility, the irony is that his bullseye appearance was to be his undoing a few years down the line.
Absolutely. So due to a spree of armed house robberies in the local area, Cooper was soon to be on the police radar and his details logged as a violent criminal known to use extreme force without provocation. In 1998, he was arrested after 30 robberies, 30 and violent assault. Still not known as a killer, he was sentenced to 14 years in prison. In one house robbery, Cooper had terrified a lone elderly woman. Even after tying her up and beating her with a shotgun, she managed to raise the alarm, causing Cooper to flee. In a rare moment of panic, he ditched his ski mask and gloves in a hedgerow, which police later retrieved. The botched robbery and the discarding of his tools led police to identify and arrest him. Items officers found at Cooper's house included a pair of khaki shorts taken from his bedroom. They wouldn't be significant to the investigation for quite another bit, like probably another 10 years or so. But meanwhile, with Cooper residing in prison and with remand meaning a lighter sentence than was originally given, the clock was ticking down to the release of a sadistic killer back on the streets and one who may take to killing again for just a few pounds.
In 2006, a group of detectives known as Operation Ottawa were tasked with investigating three previously unlinked crimes. Among them was the Dixon murder. One of the other double murders was the horrific attack on siblings Helen and Richard Thomas in 1985, who, like the Dixons, had been tied up and robbed before being blasted to death with a shotgun. With no forensic evidence to point to a suspect, the crimes had remained in the cold case files. A third crime the Ottawa team looked at was an appalling attack in March of 1996 on a group of teenagers in a field behind the Mount Estate, Milford Haven. Forced to lie face down by a hooded man threatening the youngsters with a shotgun, a 16-year-old girl was raped and a 15-year-old sexually assaulted by him. The cowardly attacker, again, was John William Cooper.
So he's progressed from robberies, murder, rape. So he's just doing anything and everything he can. He's just kind of lost control at this point.
It's like he thinks nothing can stop him.
Right. It took another 2 years of collating witness statements and scrutinizing thousands of old exhibits before the Ottawa team were convinced that the same person was responsible for all three crimes. Such a person, they believed, had the ability to control multiple victims, understood the rural area, and was unafraid to use extreme violence at the hands of a shotgun. Two of the crimes, that of the Thomas murders and the attack on the teenagers, they were actually in close proximity to each other.
So one name that kept cropping up was Cooper's. The police noted that the armed house burglaries he was convicted of in 1998 covered the same geographical area as all the three unlinked crimes the Ottawa team were investigating. It wasn't long before Cooper became the prime suspect in all three crimes, particularly as his criminal record for violent burglary using a shotgun convinced police officers that they had their man. Once it was known that Cooper had appeared on the TV show Bullseye, meticulously scrutinizing, I don't know who wrote this, studio footage and comparing Cooper's image.
I really didn't write this.
With that of the police sketch contributed to a belief that Cooper was the killer. But the major stumbling block to making an official arrest and charging Cooper with murder was obtaining that vital nugget of forensic evidence linking him to the attack on the Dixons in 1989.
So the police were aware that Cooper was nearing his release date from prison, and time was definitely of the essence to keep him in prison for life. So in January of 2009, after just 11 years of serving time, Cooper was released. So less than 3 months later, he was rearrested in a dramatic sting on the street as police officers bundled the agitated and aggressive serial killer into a police car. They had found evidence to bring him back into custody. In Cooper's private car, the police uncovered a disturbing sign of what was to come had he not been apprehended. Newly bought rope and gloves suggested that the psychopath was able to continue, or about to continue actually, his deadly spree of murderous attacks on innocent people again. And apparently our dog Harley is barking because someone's knocking on our door.
During police interviews, the mildly spoken Cooper, betraying a soft southern Welsh lilt accent, usually kept calm and was resolute about his innocence. As the days of interviewing went by, the subject of Cooper's shotgun appeared to undermine his confidence. Cooper's demeanor, often shouting and becoming irate, demonstrated a degree of anxiety. But the vital nugget was soon to be revealed, relating to the pair of khaki shorts taken from Cooper's bedroom and which bore a resemblance to the shorts worn by a suspect seen at an ATM machine using Peter Dixon's bank card.
The very shorts that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. The identikit sketch showed a likeness to Cooper, and the shorts had in fact been taken from the Dixon's rucksack and belonged to the murdered couple's daughter.
Oh my goodness. So he was wearing women's, the clothing.
Women's clothing that he had taken from people he murdered.
Oh my goodness. So whether Cooper couldn't resist taking a trophy as the macabre reminder of his violent crime or because he simply thought the shorts would be useful to wear, it was Cooper's own insistence in a police interview that the shorts in the suspect picture were longer than the ones in his possession that led to a breakthrough. Dr. Angela Gallup of LGC Forensics played a major role in discovering vital evidence from the shorts. So having been alerted to the fact that the ones taken from Cooper's house were shorter in length, Gallup and her team unpicked the stitching and discovered that they had originally been longer. So Cooper's wife had shortened them some years before. Within the lining of the folds, vital fibers were found that matched the scene of the crime on the Pembrokeshire walking trail where the Dixons had been murdered. More importantly, was a minute speck of blood on the shorts, previously hidden, that the lab team were able to extract a DNA profile from. It matched that of Peter Dixon. Unable to explain how his shorts had DNA evidence from Dixon, police were astonished by the way Cooper unashamedly passed the blame onto his innocent son by suggesting that the young lad would borrow his shorts. Despite Cooper's pitiful attempt to implicate his own child in the double murder, the shotgun itself revealed Peter Dixon's blood under black paint along the gun's barrel. Cooper had simply painted the gun, believing it would obliterate any evidence of the crime.
Oh my goodness. So on his way into court to be tried for four counts of murder, including rape, Cooper shouted at the press, "Judge me after the trial and not before." The evidence from the khaki shorts and the shotgun revealing DNA of murder victim Peter Dixon was damning. Cooper's own son acted for the prosecution via video link, and the traumatized teenagers attacked and sexually assaulted by Cooper in 96 also gave evidence in an emotional testimony about how the psychotic brute had terrified them and changed them forever. Cooper received life imprisonment, a whole life order, and incarcerated without parole in May of 2011.
And we definitely want to always be sure that we thank our sources from where we get our information. And this time we did get our information from Richard Bevan. He is an actual crime writer. And we want to thank him for his hard work in putting together the profile of this killer. Without work like his, we would have little information to go on to help us. As psychologists, to map out and study the minds of psychopaths such as John William Cooper. And we definitely want to thank you guys for allowing us to add a little bit of humor at the beginning and a lot of Harley barking in the middle. So that's just our normal life, and so we invite you guys in and we hope you don't mind those little things. But we always look forward to our next podcast with you guys and the release, and until then, say it with us. No, she didn't, but now she does.
Or, no, she didn't. But now she does.
Oh, Jay.